Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cool Zone Media.
Hello, and welcome to Cool People Did Cool Stuff, your weekly podcast of which I'm the host, Parker Killjoy, of which this time, Mia Wong is the guest. Hi, Mia.
Hello, I'm back again. We're Kronstadt 2, Kronstadt Harder.
Yeah,
excited to be here. Or is this Kronstadt, was this Kronstadt 3 Tokyo Drift already? I don't know how you count the episode pairs.
Oh, I'm not sure. Yeah, because this is part 3 of a 6-parter, but since I always think of them as double, no, I don't know. We're in the middle. We're entering the middle period. But fortunately, here to guide us along is our producer, Sophie. Hi, Sophie.
It's me, the producer, Sophie. Hi. Mia's here.
And then one of the other people who makes it happen is Daniel,
hey,
who's
Daniel.
Our audio engineer. Hi,
Daniel.
Our theme music was written for us by Unwoman. And I promised Mia right before we recorded that today I am going to talk about what I believe to be the largest moral and strategic misstep in anarchist history.
Yeah, this is wild to me because this is worse than working with the government in Catalonia. This is worse than going off the barricades. It's like, oh wow, this is worse than the Chinese anarchists working with Chiang Kai-shek.
That one, like, I don't know about, but it might be comparable to working with Chiang Kai-shek.
This is probably worse because also, by that point there just weren't that many of them.
I have a feeling that this is probably why they worked with Chiang Kai-shek. For anyone who's listening, that's the nationalist general who the Maoist army was fighting in China, right?
Yeah, I can explain it really briefly. So basically, okay. That one was, there was a faction of anarchists who were just like friends with him.
Yeah.
And so they backed Chiang Kai-shek, also partially as a result of a bunch of anarchists getting killed in Russia.
Right.
A lot of other anarchists refused to back them and were like, what are you guys doing? This guy is a
right
drug baron, like right wing, like nationalist weirdo, but you know that's for another episode.
Although I want to see at the end of part 4 how you feel about that decision that they made, because where we last left our heroes and soon to be antagonists, the revolution of 1905 had largely failed in Russia. Right, this is our 6-parter about the Kronstadt uprising, but it's secretly the entire 1905 to 1921 Russian Revolution series, so that I can eventually do other spin-off episodes that talk about these things and have done more of the research myself, and or you all have had options to hear it. So 1905 revolution has largely failed. Most of the militant revolutionaries are dead, imprisoned, or in exile, and of all of the different socialist factions. And once again, You've got the SRs, who are the agrarian socialists that came out of Russia's own 19th century social movements. You've got the Marxists, who are the social democrats. And then you've got the anarchists. And all of these factions, you also have the cadets, which are like the like liberal centrists. Actually, will they come later? But there are other factions, but these are the like leftist factions, right? All of these factions have their own internal divisions. Most famously, the Marxists are split between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. And the Bolsheviks are headed up by Vladimir Lenin, who wanted an elite vanguard of middle-class intellectuals to drag the working class kicking and screaming into the revolution. And you had the Mensheviks, who are just kind of like a little bit less fiery and a little bit less vanguardy. And so in like some ways, they're kind of like better. And in some kind of ways, they're, I mean, I like most things like better than I like the Bolsheviks, but.
They have some great one-liners. Like, I remember, it was like an art class in college, but we read this line of this Menshevik in, like, I think 1918 going, talking about the Bolsheviks saying, "You can't build socialism the way the pharaohs built the pyramids," which I always liked.
Yeah.
It's just a great line, but they, great one-liners, less great organizing in politics. I mean, so
maybe, I mean, they're still better than the Bolsheviks, like, but anyway. Well, they didn't do as good of a job as it because the Bolsheviks win. But you can say that about everyone else we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
Because the Bolsheviks beat everyone, including themselves and all of the people who follow. Anyway, whatever. So the SRs have their moderate wing and their extreme wing. The extreme wing are the maximalists. The anarchists are less like divided into two factions as much as they are a series of different ideologies who sometimes work together and sometimes don't. In general, you've got the least revolutionary, who are the anarcho-syndicalists, and then you have the anarcho-communists, and then you have the anarcho-communists who are like too radical for the other anarcho-communists, who are like, "We don't like you Kropotkinists, you all are too democratic." Whatever, nothing changes. All of the more extreme factions of each of these groups, from the Bolsheviks to the left SRs to and the maximalists to the most of the anarchists are running around killing motherfuckers, robbing motherfuckers, and just generally trying to utilize terrorism for political ends. By and large, they've all failed at this point. So most of them are writing about all this in exile or getting political education from other imprisoned radicals or being dead, which was another popular pastime of failed revolutionaries worldwide, actually.
Yeah, great way to pass the time. It will pass all of your time.
Yeah, everything's past tense at this point. This quiets down Russia a little bit, but to be honest, it was mostly just angry peasants and workers who were doing all the uprising, not the ideologues of any of these groups or parties. So things stayed kind of spicy. And you've got Tsar Nicholas II, who never wanted to be Tsar. He's pretty... Every single historian that I have run across of every left and right agrees this guy was just weak and spineless as far as autocrats go. And he was just like the wimpy czar. And most historians tend to be like, there was no way he was going to survive as czar. Tsardom was fucking done no matter how it went with this guy in charge. With the possible exception as if he had really leaned into constitutional monarchy after 1905 and had basically just like stepped back. Him and his family could have survived and Russia could have been like the UK or the Netherlands.
But I think the problem with that is like a czar could have done that. Tsar Nicholas, the guy, could not have done that.
No.
Like he is too much of a micromanager. He is too much of a like I'm going to be the czar guy.
Yeah. Which is funny because he didn't even want to be czar. Like,
yeah. It's a fiasco.
He's like, well, I guess I'm going to be the most czarish czar because yeah.
It's like you could just not be the czar, but no.
I know.
It's so easy to not be the czar. I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, I am 80% committed to not being the czar. So the czar promised a Duma, which is a Congress of sorts, and even though it barely had any power, he still kept disbanding it and getting annoyed at it because of micromanaging autocratic stuff. And then he would like call for new elections every time it seemed like politically necessary. People were getting really annoyed by this, and lots but not all of the revolutionaries are boycotting Duma elections, which actually... sort of worked as far as I can tell. Like boycotting elections is sometimes a strategy that does not work and sometimes is a strategy that works. Whenever people are like, this is the revolutionary strategy that works, I'm always like, yeah, it's always a crapshoot. Just always. So the only fun part about talking about inter-revolutionary Russia is that we get to talk about everyone's favorite piece of shit, Rasputin.
Hey!
He's so cool that Boney M. wrote a sick song about him. It was covered by the folk metal band Teresis. Because it's Ra Ra Rasputin.
That's my favorite version of it.
Please
oh,
stop,
it's so good.
Please stop telling us that Robert looks like him. We've heard your theories.
After having done more research about Rasputin, would never say that about Robert.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Please stop doing that theory.
Yeah. Like, so Rasputin is not cool people did cool stuff.
And
I
Robert
used to think he
is.
Was interesting people who survived a lot of assassination attempts.
Right.
Realistically, he only survived one assassination attempt, which is more assassination attempts than I've survived.
That's true. But like, that's also, he's also on the list of like, on the memorial Hitler list of that guy shouldn't have made it.
Yeah, totally. And so we're going to talk about him because he's still kind of funny. He's interesting. Because this is the part of the story where you can point to royal inbreeding as being the driving force of the Russian Revolution and world attempts to state socialism. If you really want to pull your red yarn out as far as it can go. Because Nicholas II, his wife Alexandra was a German princess and was granddaughter of Queen Victoria of the UK, because everything that you think about how inbred and incestuous and the aristocracy was an entirely different class of people that ruled all of Europe. However bad you think it was, you're right. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, they're all cousins.
Yeah.
Like, it's terrible.
The royal line is famous for being a pretty straight and narrow family tree. And it means that certain traits are more likely to occur. Alexandra was a carrier for hemophilia, which means that blood doesn't clot properly. If you get cut, you can bleed out. It's not great. I mean, people have it, and I'm not trying to be like, aha, everyone has it, sucks. Like, but, you know, it wasn't a good thing to have at the beginning of the 20th century. It was also called the royal disease because so many men in the family had it. And so the heir to the throne, Nicholas's own son, Alexei, had it. And they tried to hide it from everyone. And they tried everything to solve the problem, especially doctors. But doctors didn't help because it's the beginning of the 20th century. And eventually people will say the same thing about doctors now because we're all still learning. Enter the wandering mystic Grigory Rasputin. He was born a Siberian peasant, and people know almost nothing about his upbringing. Okay, the thing that I like about him, he is kind of this blank thing that you can like project whatever you want onto. Like,
yeah, but so was Louis Napoleon. So Napoleon III. Okay. So, you know, not necessarily a good
yeah.
thing.
Fair enough. He was not formally educated. Was Robert formally educated? And also, was Robert born a Siberian peasant? Is an unknown.
We may never know.
Much like Robert Evans, nothing is known about this man's past. He was probably a rowdy kid. Okay, this part does line up. And then when he was like 28 and he had like a wife and kids and stuff, he was like, oh shit, I'm having visions. I should go wandering. In the process, he became friends of the pod, XVX. He swore off meat and alcohol.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Usually it's revolutionary, so I talk about our XVX on this show, but apparently this piece of shit sexual assaulter, spoiler alert, he's a massive rapist.
Do people even know what XVX? Because, like, I didn't know what that was, even though everyone says that I'm straight edge. I'm like, no.
Okay, so XVX is punk shorthand for vegan straight edge. And that means that you don't eat animal products and you don't drink alcohol or do drugs besides caffeine. And it's a thing that some people are. I'm not. I'm vegan almost edge. It's a different thing. I don't get the cool points for it. I'm also not a wandering mystic until I get this van done. Anyway, he's like, he attracted a following. He joined a cool, probably terrible, but interesting self-flagellation and orgy cult.
Oh my God.
One day I'm going to do a whole episode just about weird Russian cults when I'm like not doing actual cool people that did cool stuff and I'm just doing weird stuff. Because the very first episode that I ever did of this show in terms of research was about the Russian nihilists. And I fell down this 2-day rabbit hole before I knew how to do this properly, where I have to put out a new episode, 2 episodes every week. I found on a 2-day rabbit hole about this like castration cult that was really big in
what?
Russia, where they were all like chopping off dicks and nuts and stuff all the time. I think it might have only been nuts, but I can't remember. It might have been dicks too. I have all the notes about it, and it was this like wild cult that like came out of Siberian peasantry and then like was like kind of like the Masons, where it was like this like secret society that like This is completely off script. Anyway, that's a different weird cult.
Baffling stuff.
So, he's in a weird cult. He is not a formal priest or doctor or anything, much like Robert Evans is not actually a doctor, regardless of what he tells you. And soon enough, he is basically the personal physician to this sick Czar's kid. You ever read about how he actually managed to cure the hemophilia of the Czar's kid?
Wasn't it like they stopped giving him arsenic or something, or like lead?
Willow bark.
Ah.
Aspirin. So all the doctors had been failing to heal this kid. And so this faith healer who came in and just like prayed over him and like made him lay in bed did. And there's two possible explanations. One is that the praying worked and the, you know, various god or gods intervened on the behalf of this child. And the other is that since he had scared off the doctors stopped giving him aspirin, basically willow bark, which is a blood thinner. So bed rest and not aspirin helped. Because sometimes nothing is better than what doctors do.
Yeah. Especially pre, like, full, pre them figuring out how the human body sort of works, doctors.
Yeah, totally. Again, I never want to come too hard for old-timey doctors because I'm like, that is what people will say about us if the human race survives the climate crisis. They'll be like, they thought what?
Yeah, it's like you guys were doing surgeries by cutting people's bones with saws. What is wrong with you people?
Yeah, and they'll like conflate. They'll be like old-timey medicine, and they'll be like they'll conflate like ether and like SSRIs and the four humors all into one. They'll be like, you know. Anyway, so Rasputin, he is almost certainly a sex-crazed piece of shit who sexually assaults people and extorts influence favors for sexual favors. He's like, oh yeah, I have a direct line to the Tsar and the Tsarina in particular. Well, I guess the Tsar's wife. I think Tsarina means she's regnant, ruling, but I'm not actually sure. Anyway, he's like, yeah, you do this thing for me, I'll do this thing for you. And it's funny is because the main thing people argue about is whether or not he was sleeping with the Tsar and the Empress, which he may or may not have been, but that's so much less important to me than understanding that multiple women came forward accusing him of rape, one of whom was immediately disbelieved and fired. She was a governess for the young daughters. There's a lot of fairly reasonable ideas that he was mistreating the young daughters of the royal family. He sucks. That's the, even though the people who dislike him are super right wing, it doesn't matter. He sucks.
Yeah, so he does actually suck. He just sucks for a different reason than the right wing people hate him for.
Yeah, totally. Because they hate him because there's a wild scandal going on, like about whether he's fucking the Tsar and the wife and like whether or not, you know, like, I don't know, whatever. And the royal family keeps defending him. They're like, well, he's holy. Everything. He's practically a saint. He can't do anything wrong. And the Russian people, both highborn and low, are like, oh, my God, fuck this guy. It is seriously impacting Nicholas II's reputation internally and internationally that this is happening. And I don't know if you knew this, Mia. Overall, during this time period, the people of Russia are not afraid to assassinate people.
Yeah.
It's like kind of a thing. Not saying anyone should bring that back in Russia right now, but oh, wait. Well, there's the whole dead oligarchs thing, but that's the other direction. That's state-sponsored killing. So the first attempt on his life was by this peasant woman who didn't have a nose named Kionia Gusea. And she was 33 and she stabbed him and screamed, I have killed the Antichrist. Just pretty cool. It's kind of up there with Six Emperor Tyrannus.
It's pretty good, but it has this issue. This is the thing I've run into a lot of like in the history of political assassination. It's like you got to go for multiple stabs and you have to do follow-up shots. Make sure they're actually dead. This happens all the time. Always take the second shot. This is my advice to the aspiring, I don't know, guy who wants to
solve some problems in Russia now directly.
Yeah, take the second shot and possibly the third one. You might also need number four. You never
keep
know.
Keep going until the problem is certainly solved. Reload. Keep spare mags. Like whatever. Yeah, no. And they didn't have like CSI or whatever, so they didn't know that like when people die of stab wounds, they have like 37 stab wounds.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's something people, I think to this day, people, like, there's this weird thing that comes from movies and video games where people think that, like, you can just, like killing someone with a knife is, like, really quiet and they just instantly die. It's like, no, this is, like, the loudest conceivable way to kill someone that's not, like, an anti-aircraft gun.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a long time and...
Yeah, and so it didn't work. He ran away. She chased him. He turned around and, like, fought her, and a crowd formed. And, you know, she gets arrested. Later, she's released after the revolution, and then she tries to kill a bishop. And I think she's, like, then sent into an asylum at some point.
What? Wait, the revolutionary sent her to an asylum for trying to kill a bishop? Okay. Wow. Wow. They're betraying their Marxist principles here. This is really...
By trying to... Wait. No... I don't think she was a Marxist. She was just released by the revolution.
Yeah, sure. But if you're a revolutionary, if you're like a Bolshevik, aren't you supposed to be fine with people killing bishops?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, we're going to get to how little the Bolsheviks care about what they're supposed to do with the revolution.
True.
But first, do you know what the Bolsheviks do care about?
Is it the products and services that support this podcast?
So that's right, because they are universally loved. They are so universally loved that even anti-capitalists put their ads into their shows, and even authoritarian anti-capitalists like the Bolsheviks also love them. Here,
yeah, in the words of another Bolshevik descended party, the Chinese Communist Party, follow the party, start a business.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, the Bolsheviks don't let people do that.
But yeah, this is the CCP's unique.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Well, here's the ads.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And then some nobles do take out Rasputin. They take him out in 1916. The story is like pretty murky and retold in different ways, and it's almost certainly told in a very sensationalist way. But that very way is fun, so I'll tell it. Which is that they like lured him into the basement. They gave him a whole bunch of poisoned cakes, and he ate like 10 of them, and he was like, "Those are good." And they were like, "Here, drink this wine. It's totally not poison." But it was poison. And then he drank like 3 glasses, and he was like, "I'm happy. This is good." And then they shot him in the chest, and then he was like, leaped up like a horror movie and was like, "Ah," and like chased the person who had shot him in the chest. And so they had to put a bullet in his head and throw his body into the river in order to stop him. Later, people were like, "He didn't eat sweet things. That didn't happen." Mm. Which also implies that either he also didn't drink or he had started drinking again. I don't know. I don't know enough about his...
Who knows?
The problem with him is he's a fucking edge breaker. That's the problem with him. Which is what you call someone who's straight edge, who stops being straight edge. Anyway, the most likely story is that some aristocrats were like, "We don't like this guy," and then they shot him in the head. And then it was done. One bullet. Anyway, Rasputin, weird guy. Glad he's dead. But it plays a big part in the downfall of...
Yeah.
Because people were really unhappy about this, which is... You should be upset when there is a rapist in executive power. Like,
you know,
might be again after the next election.
You would think, but...
Yeah. Because Rasputin's running. That's what I'm trying to say. I would never make any allegations about any candidates besides Rasputin. Anyway, more important to the story is the old World War I. So check that off on your bingo cards. It's 1914. Rasputin still isn't dead at this point. Some Bosnian Serbs assassinated an Austro-Hungarian guy, and then Austro-Hungary was like, "Fuck you, Serbia." And then Russia was like, "Well, we don't have treaty obligations, but we like kind of consider Serbia to be part of the general Russian sphere of influence." So Nicholas II was like, "All right, fuck it, let's go." And so mobilized to defend Serbia. And Germany was like, "Well, then we declare war." And then Russia was like, "Well, then we're going to attack." And that's the start of World War I. And
terrible idea. 0 out of 10. All of you. Worst. No.
Yeah.
don't be ruled by kings.
Yeah. Did not go well for anybody, this particular war.
I mean, I guess the Bolsheviks.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. It did go well for the Bolsheviks. Although the first thing that they did was get out of it. Anyway. So, no one who was involved did it go well for.
Yeah.
Nicholas II was like, "You know, last time I threw a war in order to stave off revolution, it didn't work out at all, and I almost died. Surely, this time it'll go better." Because there's all this propaganda about how Russia's going to, like, roll right into Germany and conquer. This did not happen. As per usual, Russia did what Russia does best in a war: have a very large army full of conscripts with very bad leadership and bad equipment and throw bodies at the problem. Has no comparison to now. Famously.
Yeah, except although they were fighting a much, like, no offense to the Ukrainian army, which has fought above its capacity, mm-hmm. but like the 1914 German army, oh boy, do you not want to fight that army. Like, Jesus
that
Christ.
Makes sense.
Those guys are scary. Like, those people.
They went to war against the entire world and almost won.
Yeah.
Twice,
yeah. And it's like really, yeah. They, like, especially in World War I, like, all of their allies are a joke.
Okay.
So they're a terrifying army. 0 out of 10. Don't let the Germans form an army because...
Yeah.
Never good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're famous for their efficiency, and unfortunately, efficiency is an incredibly important part of war. So, famously, also, soldiers don't like being sent to war without guns.
Yeah.
Some of them don't have boots and are basically told, "Get boots off the guy next to you when he dies." And, like, this is also a, like... Like, I've read accounts from people who fought in the Red Army during World War II and, like, were told to attack tanks with their bare hands, you know? Most of the peasants were drafted from the peasant class. Families watched their sons leave, pretty sure that they'd never see their sons again. And they were mostly right.
Yeah.
And people were really fucking poor, as per usual. A third of the draftees have to be rejected for medical reasons because ill health is so rampant. World War I doesn't do anyone any favors. It's the first time European powers have the machine gun to use in a war against each other instead of colonized people. And so they're just throwing bodies into the grinder, and it is bad times all around. The only thing, good thing that came out of World War I is, of course, Lord of the Rings. And almost the Russian Revolution. The Lord of the Ring things that Tolkien fought in World War I, and that influenced his decision around how to make the most important book of our time. So the Russian Revolution almost was really cool and came out of World War I. So that's like close.
Yeah, it's like one and a quarter, one and an eighth.
Yeah. I hate the big man theory of history. Everything I've read, you can kind of blame the destruction of socialism at the feet of Vladimir Lenin more than anyone else. Because he engineered, again, this is the best I can tell, he engineered the Bolsheviks into doing what even they didn't want to do, at least at first. And I think all of them were fine with taking power and stuff. But the way in which the Bolsheviks did this, which we'll get to. But we'll get to that. He's not even in the country at this point. He's in Switzerland. So without any of the leaders of the revolution, I just wanted to point out that Lenin wasn't there because I'm a little salty anarchist bitch.
Yeah.
So without any of the so-called leaders of the revolution, including all the anarchists, right? Like they're all fucking locked. I mean, the leaders of the anarchist movement or whatever, all locked up too, right? Or in exile or dead. Russia's going to have a revolution without everyone. And they're going to call it the February Revolution because it happened in March. That's a little switching calendars joke for you. All throughout World War I, the Tsar is kind of like off at war, becoming increasingly popular, and Alexandra is acting as sort of a czarina, and no one likes her at all. There are general strikes all over, a massive upheaval. Over a year and a half, they had 4 prime ministers, 5 ministers of the interior, 3 foreign ministers, 3 war ministers, 3 ministers of transport, and 4 ministers of agriculture.
They have adopted the British mode of government, which is very, very traditionally aside, things are going great.
Yeah.
Totally. All the peasants are hanging cabbages outside, one for every minister.
Yeah. And so the Duma is like, hey, can this bad ruler, Alexandra, stop being ruler? And Saint Nicholas? No, Nicholas II, not a saint. Oh, wait, they did saint him. The Russian Orthodox Church, I think, sainted his entire family.
Oh, God, why would you say?
Because of the Russian Orthodox, whatever, anyway.
Oh, my God.
So Nicholas II dissolved the Duma yet again instead of doing what they asked him to do, which was the reasonable thing. And he announced that the interior minister was dictator. And this was not a popular move. So one morning in February or March 1917, depending, we're going to go with March 8th because I'm Cool Zone Media is officially Western calendar bigots. So March 1917, Russia throws a revolution. It is a balmy 16 degree day, 16 degrees in the real temperature scale, of course, Fahrenheit. But soon it gets way colder. Like all the best revolutions, they did not know they were throwing a revolution. And as so often is the case, it was started by women.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's like, I probably learned that in high school, to be clear. That's not like a hidden fact, but like I didn't realize that the first Russian Revolution of 1917 was started by women. For years at this point, as the war immiserated the peasants and the workers, the aristocracy was still like eating cake and going to the theater and drinking champagne. And everyone else is starving at home or starving at the front or dying violently in one of those two places. And so they're like, all right, we're going to do something about it, you know, right? And the cool thing about internationalism is that it's international. So I'm going to tie the roots of this particular thing to the United States. Only then I'm going to tie it back to Russia. Because there's this woman, Teresa Mikhail. She was born a Russian Jew, born in what's now Ukraine. She was born on May Day, May 1st, 1874.
Ah!
Yeah, before there was a May Day even. She was 17 when her family emigrated to the Lower East Side of New York City, and she got to work as a cloak maker. She organized the Infant Cloak Makers Union of New York because people knew how to dress their babies back then in cloaks with chainmail.
Wait, we got it. Okay, I now know people who have babies. We've got to bring this back. We can do this.
Since the main expense in DIY in a cloak is that it costs hundreds of dollars of wool to make, ask me how I know. Infant cloaks are a discount. It's a sweet deal. Bonus sponsor, Infant Cloaks. It's not even an ad break. That's just how excited I am. Anyway, Teresa represents her union through various labor federations and such, and winds up in the Socialist Party of America. Supposedly, the socialists believed in equal rights for women, and she, like a lot of other people, tried to make that actually true by fighting for it. And she pitched that there should be a National Women's Day, and it was first on February 28, 1909. By 1911, the International Socialist Women's Conference managed to get an International Women's Day, and over 1 million people participated in that first one. So, International Women's Day, 1917, women in Russia went on a one-day strike, and the strike was focused in St. Petersburg. And this was not a polite and peaceful affair. They demanded bread and peace. They marched through the streets, looting stores to distribute, like, rich pastries that were just for rich people.
Rules. Unbelievably based.
No, I know. And one of the reasons I point that out is because, like, there is no clear history of the Russian Revolution that's ever been written, as far as I can tell.
No, everyone this isn't has one either. Their own angle.
Like, yeah. And so I'm just trying to be really upfront about my own angle here. But, like, everything you read from all of these different sources, because there's also so much happened chaotically that it's not like these sources are lying. It's that they're choosing which facts to represent or even only know about certain facts, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's like Lenin's best line about this period that I really felt during 2020 was there are decades where nothing happens and weeks where decades happen.
Yeah.
And this is the decades are happening like right here.
Totally. In 8 days, they ended a 300-year dynasty. And like the thing that took years for them to try to get in 1905 happened in 8 days. And some of the accounts of this, the reason I'm pointing out that these folks looted on the very first day of it was because some of the accounts are like, and then they let everyone out of jail, but they didn't just let the good political prisoners let out. They let everyone else out too. And suddenly there was looting, you know? And it's like, I'm sure that a lot of the people that they let out of jail looted. There's no doubt in my mind. Also, a whole bunch of people who weren't in jail already looted.
Because it's cool, it turns out.
Yeah. So some troops refused to fire on them because they were women. And frankly, and very importantly, morale among soldiers was fucking, to use your phrase, dog shit at this point. Yeah. Men joined in soon enough. There was men there at the beginning too. But like overall, more of the workers now are coming out. And there were general strikes that have been happening among different industries happening immediately prior to this. But
The version of it that I heard was like part of what goes on is like, so it's an International Women's Day event and a lot of the like the male political groups were like, we're not going to go out. And so people are like running from factory to factory yelling like, get out here. Like, what are you people doing? Which rules and no, I love it.
I believe you. That makes more sense, frankly. And it takes them a while to even get the political parties involved because so many actual uprisings start with marginalized people and eventually political groups attach themselves once they realize that the momentum can't be stopped. Because usually they want to be like, well, we want to be the ones who have done it, right? Revolution takes 8 days. On March 12th, the military in St. Petersburg switched teams to join the revolution, killing the officers that wouldn't let them. A few days after that, Nicholas II was like, okay, fine, I give up. You can have your country back, you fucking peasants. All without any central organizing to the revolution. None of that has happened yet at this point. About 1,300 people or so died during that revolution. And then
which
you have the classic
staggering
problem.
Like, that's so few people
I know.
For a system of government that is, like, twice as old as, like, the United States.
Yeah. No, it's
incredible.
Yeah. It's like, respect to those 1,300 people who died, but it is such an incredibly low number. And you have this classic problem, a power vacuum. Don't worry, plenty more people are going to die because of this revolution.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Not during the immediate revolution.
But the first revolution, they did a really good job. It's
they
just
did.
Everything subsequent to that.
They did.
Issues emerge.
It's the people who tried to take power that, anyway, whatever. So two forces step into the vacuum and with a really uneasy alliance. And the laziest way that people talk about the February Revolution is that the provisional government took over. The accurate way is that the provisional government had to figure out how to share power with the Soviets because the Soviets are back. The provisional government is composed of people from the Duma and shit. And so the last time that they've been elected was 1912. And so they're like, they kind of know they're not ready to be the elected officials of the government, right? But they're the kind of middle class version of the revolution. At that point, it's mostly centrists and liberals in the Duma because everyone else has been boycotting elections and stuff. The Soviets are filled with socialists of all kinds, unless you read a Bolshevik history, in which case they were all Bolsheviks. And the provisional government is like, all right, we're going to become a republic and have elections and shit and solve the land problem for the peasants. Just not yet. We got to stay in World War One. We can't ditch the Allies. We can't like redistribute all the land and stuff because we're in the middle of a war, you know? Everyone else is like, well, why are we in the middle of this war? Are we inside this war? But their plan is to eventually have a constituent assembly that is voted for, and this would become the government, and they would be a republic. But for now, they would be in charge. The Soviets, who are an elected body already, and they've been elected in a grassroots direct delegate way, are like, well, the people of Russia aren't at war with Germany. The Russian Empire was at war, and that's gone. So they disagreed. The provisional government had like the symbols and stuff, the symbolic parts of the state. The Soviets had the actual practical power because they had the workers and the peasants and the soldiers. So the provisional government is like, hey, socialists, could you please join us? You can join us now. Hey, do you want to join us? And the Soviets, and a lot of them do, a lot of the SRs in particular, which is the largest group by popularity and delegates. It is the most important socialist group at this point. And the Soviets are like, all right, our order number one, it's literally their order number one, is that the provisional government orders will only be followed if we wanna.
Which rules. more people should do this. This is great.
No, it's so frustrating because it's like, the Soviets are the good guys here. I mean, the provisional government, I like kind of get where they're coming from. I'm not trying to be like, oh, what a bunch of assholes, right? But like, no, there's this bottom-up electoral system that's already in place. So just fucking go with it and not do what Lenin's about to do. And 700 of these Soviets spread across the country. And this is like, I think it actually has further reach overall than the provisional government doesn't have as much reach in the peasant areas, is my understanding, but I'm not 100% certain about that. Because you read like 8 different things and they all disagree. Yep. But what everyone does agree about is that these are deals that you should totally listen to and not do this thing that would be really easy to do, which is press the forward 15 second button on your phone as soon as you hear the theme music and then wait until you hear the theme music again and then stop pressing forward. You shouldn't do that. Never. You should listen to all of these advertisers and then do whatever they tell you to do.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So things are unstable in Russia after this revolution. All the revolutionaries are suddenly let out of prison all over the country, and so are a lot of other people. So there's looting. I mean, whatever. Like, I'm like, looting, get the cakes. It's also like, I'm sure it's also kind of bad and hard to be alive right now. You know, it's like interesting. It's not boring, but like, it's also dangerous. I'm not trying to like...
No, everyone's like starving. I mean, like, that's the other element of this. It's just like... Yeah,
totally.
It's like, wow, I wonder why these starving people are stealing cakes from a cake shop. It's like...
I know.
No one could possibly answer this. It must be the criminal element.
Yeah. Have you heard about Lenin's return during this 1917?
Yes.
I'm going to talk about it a little bit, and you can fill in any gaps, because this is the tea.
It's so wild.
So, Imperial Germany really wants the provisional government overthrown because it wants Russia to get out of the war so that Germany can focus on the Western Front. And they're like, well, if we let the commies overthrow the provisional government, we'll have one less antagonist in our war. Lenin wants to overthrow the provisional government to institute a dictatorship, not a dictatorship of the proletariat, but a dictatorship by him. As we talked about last time, his whole thing was to try and use the Soviets and then they'd become superfluous, right? And so the German government finances him and sends him back to Russia on a train that's theirs with a whole bunch of money and shit, hoping he'll do exactly what he... goes on to do.
Yep.
That's the version I heard.
Yeah, it's really wild because it's like, for all that every single one of sort of Lenin's ideological descendants are going to spend all their time accusing everyone else of being a psyop, it's like, your guy was literally paid by the German government to do this. Like, it's like, come on.
And actually, the interesting lesson here isn't that Bolshevism is a psyop. It's that sometimes powerful groups finance other groups in order to try and get what they want. It doesn't mean that Lenin wanted Imperial Germany to get what it wanted. Lenin wanted what he wanted and had no problems taking a bunch of money from the people that his country had been at war with, you know?
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, I think the other thing here is that, like, this is something you see a lot with empires, is they'll hand someone a bunch of money and that person will just turn around and then go do whatever they want with it.
Yeah, totally.
And it turns out it doesn't always work well for the people handing them the money and the guns.
Yeah. Like, I am not saying this to say that Lenin is a pawn of the German government. I am saying that Lenin, that Germany wanted to use him as a pawn and that Germany got what it wanted out of it. But anyway, Lenin gets back to Russia and he sets up trying to engineer the whole a further revolution. And he does that by bringing the Bolshevik position closer to the anarchist position, by bringing their tactics and strategies, but not their goals, closer in line to anarchism. Anarchism was the main ideology at this point that had been promoting an immediate revolution, whereas Bolshevism was still kind of gradual, even at this point. So at least according to some of the histories I read, When Lenin wrote his like big important theory book, The State and Revolution at this time, this is fundamentally changes the Marxist revolutionary strategy. And it's also kind of an appeal to the anarchists and to the other people who are like, well, we got to do this now. So anarchists saw this as Bolsheviks coming to them rather than them going to the Bolsheviks as they start having more and more of an alliance going forward over these next few months. And he also, in the State and Revolution, pushes that all states have the right to secede. He will not hold to this very long.
Yeah.
For example, yeah. Later, the Democratic Republic of Georgia will split off, formed by Mensheviks, only to be invaded by the Bolsheviks, and then, of course, Ukraine and whatever. Anyhow, so Lenin's back. Oh, boy. The provisional government is headed up by an SR, a guy named Kerensky. He's not right away. He's in April, but because in April, they're like, please, socialists, come join us, right? And one part I didn't know about that's a little bit tea in a different direction. One person who came out of exile to help advise Kerensky was our buddy Peter Kropotkin.
Oh, God, Santa I didn't Claus. Know about this part.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know, it tracks. A lot of anarchists are not stoked about Kropotkin. We talked about him a little bit last time. He's an evolutionary biologist and a former prince who is very interesting and very important to anarchist communist theory and also modern mutual aid and why animals are gay theory. He's a very interesting man. So he wanted anarchists to side with the Allies in World War I to stop Imperial Germany, felt like more important than viewing things specifically along class lines. Most anarchists were against any participation in that war.
Yeah, I was like, this is a terrible idea. Like, what are you doing?
So the anarchists in 1917 generally supported the Bolsheviks, as did a lot of the actually we need a real revolution people. Lenin is really appealing to people. He's running around shouting all power to the Soviets. That's his thing. When people say all power to the Soviets, what they mean is not provisional government, the like top down body, but yes, the bottom up body that was actually already elected. And people are into it. And his slogan is peace, bread, and land. And people like those things. I like those things. As best as I can figure out, 1917, here and there and afterwards, the anarchists were useful idiots for the Bolsheviks. The anarchists did the dirty work because we believed in revolution and because we also believed in political pluralism. It is the tolerance paradox, right? Anarchists at this point tend to believe in political pluralism, including having political pluralism and allies with groups that don't believe in political pluralism. And in 1917, Russia's unstable as fuck, and you have Revolution 1.5 that happens in July. It's called the July Days, and it's an uprising by socialists of all different stripes. Actually, kind of less the Bolsheviks than like SRs and anarchists
they kind
and
of
the people.
More sit that one out.
Like, yeah, because Lenin didn't order them to do it. And they were like, but some Bolsheviks were part of it. And then also it's like, history's so annoying and hard to read because it's like, I also read accounts that were like, and then the Bolsheviks did this thing. But that was like a Western capitalist reading of the history. So like everyone who's bad is a Bolshevik, you know?
Yeah.
Which is sometimes, though, they form that like meme where the two arms are holding hands because they both want to blame everything on the Bolsheviks because the Bolsheviks think the thing was good and the capitalists think the thing was bad. But it wasn't done by the Bolsheviks at all. It was done by like SRs or anarchists or people who have no political ideology. And what happened in July is that SR Kerensky was pushed for a military offensive against Germany. And that actually kind of worked for a minute. But at home, it made everyone remember how much they didn't want to be in a war. And the only socialists who hadn't joined the provisional government were the radicals. And so therefore, everyone else had to back the offensive, right? Because they were in the government that declared it. You know, the same
like,
way
you could have not, but they're just like, they just sort of fell in line. It's just like, you could have not done this, but.
Well, I mean, you can.
Taking power destroys your brain.
See, the best thing that came out of World War I is the Lord of the Rings, which is the parable about why you have to throw the ring of power into the fires mountain. Anyway, so the Bolsheviks, the anarchists, and some of the other like left SRs and stuff were the, I think some of the left SRs were a lot of the only people involved in the July Days, which was a big uprising by people. It's always like everyone wants to have the labels, but it's like a lot of times it's just people. People are mad, you know? And Lenin was like, no, we're not ready yet. But the uprising was put down by the provisional government, including Mensheviks and SRs, and Lenin runs off to Finland. Street demonstrations are banned. So the counter-revolution, to be fair, started before the Bolsheviks take power.
Yeah, and like Kerensky's like pretty explicit about this. I remember, right? Like he's also every single person in this. Like Kropotkin wrote a history of the French Revolution that like I think is longer than Capital. Like every single one of these people is a French Revolutionary history nerd. And Kerensky's thing is he's like, I'm gonna like be the directorate or something from the French Revolution. So I'm gonna be the guy who comes in after and like ends the revolution and like produces a stable government. So they all of these people have their sort of I am this person, even though Marx is very explicit that like don't do this. Like this is actually bad.
Yeah.
But nobody listened to him because welcome to the history of Marxism, where no one listens to Marx.
Fair enough. And sometimes I'm really glad when people don't listen to Marx, but there is some stuff he was right about.
Every like, once in a while, like
he's more than stopped clock. You know?
Yeah.
He's wrong several times a day, not just twice, but still not an accurate
timepiece. So sometimes he's like, don't put on the costumes of the previous revolution. You have to, I think his exact line was like, the revolution must take its poetry from the future, which I always loved.
Yeah, the weight of dead generations or whatever. What is the...
Yeah, the memory of dead generations weighs like a nightmare on the minds of the living.
Yeah.
Another great one.
Yeah, absolutely. So the counter-revolution has begun. Soon enough, Lenin will be back from Finland, and he'll take power in the October Revolution, which happens in November, of course. And we'll talk about it on Wednesday, unless you follow the Russian old calendar, in which case it's Tuesday. Uh-huh. That's not true.
I was trying to do the math on that, and I'm not a great math person, but...
Yeah, no, weeks and dates are unrelated to each other, by and large, yeah. But what is related to nothing, this is the worst segue I've ever had, is Mia, what do you do with your life that people could pay attention to?
Well, I do a podcast called It Could Happen Here that also has some truly abominable segues.
That's the fun part of the job.
It gets me up in the morning.
It's the segue from waking it. Anyway, sorry.
I start doing it in real life, and I'm just like, oh, no. Totally. It's too late for me. I'm too far gone. It's awful.
I do it in my collective meetings, and people kind of enjoy it, I think. Or they're all
so
very
annoying.
Nice to me.
You have to be friends with other people who get it, because they do it too, and then it's just normal. But if you're ever around people who are just not podcasting, not necessarily even people that work in the podcast space, but that like are not podcast listeners, they look at you like, I'm sorry, are you okay? And it's like, yes.
No,
and
no, we're not.
By the way, here's a fun fact about how okay I am. Podcast. Yeah. Promo anyway. Code bye.
Yeah. We'll end with that. See you Wednesday.
Cool People Who Did Cool Stuff is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.